Welcome in. This is the Heat Magnet Podcast here on the 435 Podcast Network, on 610sports.com and the radio.com app. I am your host, Chris Unocero. And before we get started, I would like to reiterate that I would appreciate it if you were to go onto the radio.com app right now and hit the subscribe button in the upper right corner of the Heat Magnet Podcast page, and make sure you download the podcast as well. It would be a huge service to me and to this show. This edition is going to be a little bit different from other episodes, as I'm going to be revealing my ballot for the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards. They do this every year. Usually it's right around early January is when they start the actual voting process and everything. And so we'll send in our ballots for who we believe should be the winners of the various awards. This is going to be my fourth time voting in these awards, and it's helped me get more into wrestling than I ever was before. And I was a big wrestling fan before, but it certainly causes me to pay more attention to each and every part, because there's a lot of awards that they give out there. There's a Class A and there's a Class B. And so it very much helps me stay informed and helps me learn more about the business. So, without further ado, let's get to my picks for my 2019 ballot in this special holiday edition of the Heat Magnet Podcast. So I'm going to start with the B Awards, and then I'm going to work my way up to wrestler to the A Awards, and then Wrestler of the Year will be my final pick. Now, Wrestler of the Year is actually not a category that is voted on by the readers of Wrestling Observer Newsletter. It's actually something that wrestlers and people in the industry vote on, but I'm still going to give you my pick for it at the end of the show. So, starting off with the B Awards, there is the United States MVP. This is for any wrestler that wrestles primarily in the United States. Does not matter where they come from. It's just a matter of where they actually work. My pick for United States MVP is Chris Jericho. I think Chris Jericho has absolutely been the most valuable wrestler in North America this year. He has helped legitimize AEW, and I think that him as their very first world champion adds a lot of prestige to that title. Because one thing we always know is that whenever you establish a brand new championship, especially if it's your world championship, your first champion needs to be someone that the fans can believe in as a credible top guy in the company. And Chris Jericho has done that and more. He has been, not only has he performed well in the ring during his matches, but he's also having killer promos, and just the way that he presents himself to the crowd with his charisma, with his presence, he just feels like he's a top star. So to me, if you take him out of the equation, it makes it tougher for AEW to be where they are right now. So he's my pick for United States MVP. For the Japanese MVP, I'm going to go Kazuchika Okada. Okada has been, he's not had quite the fanfare that he had during his previous title run, which was 2 years. But he still had an amazing year. Had a great beginning of the year when he went back to his Rainmaker gimmick, had an awesome match with Jay White where he did a great job of elevating Jay White as a title contender. Then had a great match with Jay White at the G1, I think it's G1 Supercard show at MSG WrestleMania weekend. And that was a great match, great finish. He felt like he was, top guy in that company. And then from there, he just dominated the rest of the year, had a lot of great matches, great G1 climax tournament. This guy just feels like he absolutely deserves to be in the position that he's in. And it's funny because, like, he puts on great matches all the time, and, like, he doesn't quite get the credit for those matches as much as you know, you'd like to see. Like, he doesn't get quite as much credit as Kenny Omega did for their series. And even though you look at the rest of his career, he puts on amazing matches against almost anybody he wrestles against. You know, he can wrestle against any style, and he can find a way to make it work and turn it into a great match. So I think that he is absolutely my Japanese MVP, and I think that, I mean, to be honest, it's hard for me to see anyone else being in that role, considering that he was champion for almost 9 months out of the year. My Mexico MVP is Ultimo Guerrero out of CMLL. CMLL had a lot of turbulence this year. Their owner passed away, so they had to do some reformation, and the owner's daughter ended up taking over. And they've had some issues with talent being alienated or going elsewhere. It's been a little bit tough here. So they have had to work beyond that, and it's worked out. Ultimo Guerrero's been champion the entire year, won the title in October of 2018. And they have really been in a position where they have worked their way up against that turbulence, and there's been a whole lot of stability there with Guerrero being there, even if behind the scenes we've seen some issues going on with talent relations and whatnot. So La Parca, he won it last year, but I would give it to Ultimo Guerrero this year, because I think that he's doing a really good job with carrying that company when they've been going through turbulence since the middle of the summer. As far as my Europe MVP, I think that's clearly Walter. Walter has been amazing this year. I hadn't seen a whole lot of Walter before, but like, I mean, he feels like he should be a star wherever he goes. Like, he just, the way that he presents himself, the way that he walks around, like, he just feels like a top star. And he has been over at that NXT UK brand. He's been wrestling all over Europe. And, I mean, the man just, when he comes out and he performs, he just feels like he is a big-time superstar. And I look at his work throughout this past year. Really great match with Pete Dunne at NXT TakeOver. And that really kind of put him on the map. And like, from there and then, he was just having great matches throughout the year. And, you know, WWE, the main roster, didn't do him any justice when they had the Survivor Series show. But he certainly has proven throughout the year that he absolutely belongs in any conversation for top European wrestler, certainly one of the best wrestlers in the world. As far as non-heavyweight MVP, I would say Will Ospreay. It takes home that award. Will Ospreay, to me, is just, this has been really his breakout year as far as like proving that he deserves to be in the conversation for best in the game right now. Obviously, his big year as far as like, you know, showing everybody that he deserves to be noticed was really 2016, but this year he's really proven that he can. He's not just some small wrestler that, you know, just does a bunch of flips. He's been wrestling as heavyweights in New Japan, and he's been tearing it up. He's been great. I mean, he not only did he wrestle in the Best of the Super Juniors tournament, which he won, then he went out and he wrestled in the G1 Climax, and he had a nice little run there. He didn't really come close to winning, but like, he had a nice little run there, and he put on some amazing matches. He had my second favorite match of the year when he performed. He had the in the Best of the Super Juniors final against Shingo Takagi, and like, that to me was just like, yeah, this guy's ready. He's ready to be in that upper echelon with the Okadas and the Kenny Omegas and the Naitos and guys like that. I thought he did a hell of a job as far as going out and carrying that promotion in his own way, and helping the, not only working in the junior heavyweight division, but then jumping over to the heavyweight division when they were kind of devoid of some foreign talent, and he was great in there. So I got to give him my non-heavyweight MVP. For women's MVP, I'm going to go Tessa Blanchard from Impact Wrestling. Tessa Blanchard, this was her breakout year as far as becoming a big star. Like, we know, we've known for years that Tessa's talented. She's got a nice look. She carries herself very well, and she's a good wrestler. But this was the year where she really felt like a star when you watched her perform. And that's something that I think we have to very much take seriously, because when you are in the women's division, is really, really hard to judge a lot of the women, because there's a lot of women workers that are really, really green, that are just getting into the game. Because, you know, in that genre of wrestling, the performers tend to be really young. I mean, if you look at like WWE's women's division, a lot of these women started out really young, and they were on the main roster really young. And generally, many of them are done late 20s, early 30s, because they want to go start families and whatnot. So it's really, really hard for women to go out there and like build their star power to absorbent levels, because they usually don't stick around long enough to do that. And it's really cool to see Tessa go out here and reach that level of stardom. And, you know, she's only been wrestling since 2014, so she's certainly got a lot of years left if she wants to. But this is like a nice time for her to reach that star power level. And I think that she did a great job over at Impact. She's maybe their top babyface there. So, and, you know, they've got her facing off against men. So, like, that's certainly something that is really interesting to see. And I think that Tessa is, like, very much working her way into being one of the top performers, not in a WWE or AEW. I mean, I think at that point she's probably at the very top of that. And, you know, if you're either of those companies, I mean, I'd be surprised if you don't take a serious shot at trying to get her, because she could be really valuable to either of those companies. Feud of the year, wasn't a whole lot of great memorable feuds this year. You didn't have a whole lot of amazing series that you had going on. I know WWE didn't really have any great feuds. NXT, I mean, you did have Gargano and Adam Cole, but like, if I had to take a pick for my feud of the year, as far as like what was the very best, I would say it was Kazuchika Okada versus Jay Wyatt. Okada was so good when he was doing that kind of broken Okada character, where he had his hair colored red and the red pants and whatnot. And then he comes in and he faces off against Jay Wyatt at the Tokyo Dome, brings back the Rainmaker gimmick, and he loses. He loses. And it was a really cool storyline, because then Jay Wyatt goes on to win the title. And like, now you've got that classic foreign heel that they love to do in Japan. And then Okada has his comeuppance, wins the New Japan Cup, and then challenges Jay Wyatt at the G1 Supercard show, and he proceeds to beat him in what was a great match. I mean, it was a nice build up there. He loses to legitimize Jay White, then he wrestles him for the title. It was a great, it was really, really awesome storyline. I really liked how they did that. So I would say that was my feud of the year. It really wasn't a long feud. But to be honest, I really just don't feel like there were a whole lot of great ones. And when I just think of ones that just had like the best storytelling, and I mean, the match between Okada and Jay White was not as good as Gargano and Adam Cole at NXT TakeOver, but it was still a great match. And I think the storyline as a whole just was better overall. So I'm going to give the edge to that feud. There just wasn't a whole lot of great feuds, in my opinion, this year. Most improved, Jay White. Jay White he made massive jumps in my eyes. I never viewed him as a title contender when he came back. I was like, this guy's good. I expected him to lose to Okada at the Tokyo Dome, so I was really surprised when Okada put him over. But in hindsight, I think it was actually a good choice, because you did get the best feud of the year out of it. Jay White is really talented. He is a good promo. My only thing is, I kind of feel like he's not quite playing the character as good as he could, because he just feels like a wrestler that has this cool gimmick but isn't quite utilizing it to the best of his ability. But I think that his promos were really good. Like, he's very comfortable on the microphone when he talks. When he's in the ring, he's really awesome. He's not at the level of, like, Okada or, like, Tomohiro Ishii or Kota Ibushi or Tetsuya Naito when he's not hurting too bad. But he's still pretty damn great. And, like, if he were to go to WWE right now, he'd certainly be, I mean, maybe Gargano and Daniel Bryan would be better than him. But I think he could run with AJ. Like, he's really damn good. So, I think that he's improved significantly and he feels like a top star. And he's now involved in that double champion storyline, the double championship storyline. And I'm really excited to see how that plays out in a week and a half because, I think that's going to be a pretty damn good, beginning to the 2020 wrestling calendar. So I'm excited about that. Most charismatic, I would give it to Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes did such a great job in helping to build up AEW with the way that he would cut his promos. He had some amazing promos on television, and just like when I look at Cody, like the way that his entrance is done, and it's very Triple H-esque. That's the biggest comparison that people use for him, like. When he has this really cool entrance and when he comes out and his music hits, like he feels like he is a big time superstar. And that's just so hard to find in today's world of wrestling, because now so many guys focus on the wrestling aspect as opposed to the charisma aspect. But he very much he's an old school guy. He wrestles very in old school style and he carries himself in that old school way. He's certainly taken a lot of things from like Flair, a lot of things from his father, Dusty. I just feel like when he picks up a microphone, he is able to turn anything into gold. Whenever he is, in any sort of interview that he does, he's awesome at it. Whenever he comes out, he just feels like a big time star. So if I'm going to go most charismatic, it's absolutely going to be Cody Rhodes because this is a guy that he was able to go in and like, you know, you remember a couple, you know, about three years ago when he was in WWE, he was doing the Stardust gimmick and it was a death gimmick. It was going nowhere. He knew it. That's why he asked if he could not do that gimmick anymore. And Vince refused to not let him go back to being Cody Rhodes. And so he ended up asking for his release, which I was surprised they granted it. Since then, he's done a great job of building himself up as a real star, whether it be a face or a heel, because he could play either, and he's great at both. He might even be a better heel than a baby face, because he was such a great heel in that storyline with Kenny Omega. I feel like this is really his opportunity to prove that he certainly belongs in that discussion for top stars in this era, and I think he's done a great job of doing that. The Bryan Danielson Award, which is the Best Technical Wrestler Award, it is Zack Sabre Jr. And Zack Sabre Jr. has won this award, I think, the last 5 years, I think, is something like that. He's amazing. He is such... And it's rare in today's wrestling world to see a guy that's as high level as he is. Like him, obviously, Bryan Danielson. Those two guys are really kind of in a class of their own. And you look at what ZSJ has done. I mean, he's turned a style that really is not particularly exciting. And he makes it something that's really fun to watch because he does a really good job of using ring psychology to kind of build you up. And these submission holds, when you're watching him wrestle, these submission holds feel like they are really, really painful and really dangerous. But then he also incorporates a ton of counters into his style. And so basically his, you know, like during the G1 Climax this year, the story was that in all of his matches, like, hey, I got a counter for any move you use. And it provided for some really fun matchups. So I'm actually really excited about, I'm always excited about watching Zack Sabre Jr. And I think that he has done a really great job with taking a style that really is not super popular amongst wrestlers today or fans and turning it into one that provides for some really fun matchups to watch. So you have the Bruiser Brody Memorial Award, which is Best Brawler, and that goes to Tomohiro Ishii. I believe he's won it the last 3 years. Before that, it was Katsuyori Shibata. Tomohiro Ishii is one of my absolute favorite wrestlers to watch. Like, if I had to put a hierarchy, I would say Kenny Omega 1, Kazuchika Okada 2, and Tomohiro Ishii 3. Ishii is so fun to watch because he is, it's kind of like what, you know, with Benoit, where like he would just get into these matches and he would just beat the hell out of his opponent, and he would bring the best out of his opponent a lot of times. I've watched him wrestle against Taichi earlier this year. Taichi is he's New Japan's version of The Miz. Doesn't have a great gimmick or anything. It's not really fun to watch him usually, but he's someone that on occasion can have a great match if he's got the right opponent. And Tomohiro Ishii was the right opponent for him earlier this year. I think they wrestled at Dominion. And they had a really, really entertaining singles match because Taichi conformed to Ishii's style and wrestled like a brawler, which he usually doesn't do. He just wrestles like a cowardly heel usually. He is bringing the best out of everybody. Like, his matches with Kenny Omega are always great. Whenever he has matches with Okada, they're really great. They beat the hell out of each other. I mean, Ishii brings the best out of whoever he wrestles with. And this, I mean, Shingo Takagi, I mean, just, I absolutely love Tomohiro Ishii. I think that he is one of the most fun wrestlers I've ever watched. If they were to ever decide to put the heavyweight title on him, I think he'd get mega over because he's so fun to watch and because his style looks so realistic. I mean, my absolute favorite matches I've seen of his are like his matches with like Katsuyori Shibata. Just beating the hell out of each other. Just this old school Japanese strong style type match where he's just daring his opponent to hit him harder every single time that he wrestles in these matches. He's just like, oh, you can hit harder than that. And he challenges him in these matches. And so it just feels like a real fight, as much of a real fight as it possibly can. So I love Ishii, and as long as he's performing at the level that he's performing at now, he's going to win it every year for me in my book. Best flying wrestlers, Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay, obviously one of the most athletically gifted wrestlers in the industry. This year, though, he's done a better job of incorporating his flying in a more logical manner, because there were times where he was trying to do like kung fu movie stuff where he was flipping and jumping off stuff all the time, and it didn't like fit into what the context of the match was. And then like earlier in the year, he was doing a lot of dangerous stuff in matches, and he was like, he hurt his neck doing a Spanish fly against Marty Scurll, and his head got twisted because he hit the apron instead of going straight to the floor, because he did it right off that apron. And his head got caught on there, and it looked like I thought he was dead for a little bit, because the way his head twisted, it was disgusting. But it's just like you watch him perform, and like throughout the year, he's done a better job of incorporating his flying into matches against like heavyweights, where he's just not, you know, wrestling like a luchador who's doing as many Hurricane Ranas and tilt-a-whirl, head scissors moves and whatnot. You know, he's done a better job of just making sure that every move he does makes sense. And he's still probably the best, you know, just like, it's either him or Ricochet who are the most athletic wrestlers in the game. It's one of those two. I mean, he is just so much fun to watch. I definitely really enjoy what he does. I mean, the match he had with Shingo Takagi this year was just phenomenal. And it was because you had this hard-nosed style in Shingo Takagi, because Takagi wrestles like a heavyweight. And then you've got this smaller guy in Ospreay, and he's flying all over the place. But he can also wrestle that powerhouse style too sometimes. So I think that Ospreay is Ospreay's done a really good job with how he has carried himself as a flying wrestler. Most overrated, Baron Corbin. We all know that. You knew that. I knew that. Yeah, he's not entertaining to watch. He's not fun to watch. He has potential. He's always had potential, but the way they're using him just isn't good. I mean, they and again, it's like, well, he's not overrated because look at all the boos that he gets. It's like, it's not good heat. It's not money making heat. That's not heat that's going to get people to come and watch the matches. The heat that Baron Corbin gets is the kind of heat that makes people tune out over a period of time because they get annoyed with the product. That's the reason why WWE is constantly, every single year, seeing their audience diminish. And it's going to continue that way as long as you have heels like this that the fans are just like, oh, this guy's really getting to my damn nerves. I don't really want to see this guy anymore. So Baron Corbin, very overrated, shouldn't be in the position that he's in. I'll tell you this, if they ever put the world title on him, it would be bad for the ratings, I think. I think it would be really bad for the ratings because I just don't think – I think fans would be pissed off in a way where they'd be like, okay, I'm just not going to watch. And I think that's part of the reason why they haven't put the title on him, because they're like, that guy is not like – we can't put the championship on him. We can only have him get in the way of the champion from time, or get in the way of the next, you know, the challenger for that championship. But that's not, he's not a top guy. So I think that he's very overrated. Certainly not entertaining to watch. Most underrated, I almost went Ricochet here. I really almost went Ricochet here. I think you can make a case for him just because this year he really hasn't. I mean, he went from being like a star in NXT to being on the main roster, and the fans want to like him, but the company doesn't want to book him that way. They want to book him like Vince likes to do with smaller guys, where he has them get beat up all the time and lose all the time. But I looked at who I then, but then that kind of led me to the idea of who has Vince booked like that worse than Ricochet? You could go Buddy Murphy here. Buddy Murphy's really damn talented. You could go Cedric Alexander. Cedric Alexander got buried like a mofo this year. He got buried hardcore, got a push earlier this year, and then late summer, early fall, he just gets buried. You know, AJ Styles feud buried, and now he's nowhere to be found. If I had to make a pick, though, I would say Chad Gable. Chad Gable's really, really talented, really good, but he's got a terrible gimmick. He got saddled with the Shorty G gimmick. It's not good. It's a terrible gimmick. And it's Vince's idea of, he's small, so I got to book him like I got to humiliate him in order to get him over because Daniel Bryan thing. And it's just like, the fans aren't quite sold on Chad as like a legitimate contender. Maybe you should have him win first before you try to do something like this. And they have a guy who was really over. He was in that King of the Ring tournament, in the finals, going up against Baron Corbin. And then they have Baron Corbin beat him. And it's like, Baron Corbin doesn't need to win King of the Ring. I mean, if you want to ruin Baron Corbin even worse than you have, sure, because he's got this terrible King gimmick now. But Chad Gable is really, really, really good. And he's got a lot of potential to be one of the top baby faces in that company. And instead, they're like, okay, we're just going to give him the Shorty G gimmick, give him terrible wrestling gear, and we're going to have him put over big guys. It just, to me, it's a waste of talent. It is a waste of someone who could be one of your bigger stars and make you a lot of money. And the fans want to root for him because he's like a real underdog. So I just, it's Vince McMahon not understanding what the fans want and how to give it to them. Rookie of the Year is the most difficult category to pick every single year because it's hard to keep track of who's really a rookie, because a lot of times these wrestlers have been wrestling for a couple years or so before they really start to break out. So it's I mean, you really have to do research for this. My pick, though, is Cain Velasquez. Cain Velasquez came in this year. He's approaching 40. He's almost 40. And I believe he's 38. He's like 37, 38. He's old. And he went from the UFC and got into professional wrestling. And he started wrestling in Mexico as a luchador for, I think it was AAA. And because I think he was at Triple Mania, wrestled in a match, in his first match ever, and he looked good. He was wrestling like a luchador. He wasn't wrestling like a big dude, a 6'3", 250-pound, well, he's like 235-pound guy. He was wrestling like a big guy. And he's wrestling like a luchador. He was doing head scissors and he was doing Hurricane Ranas. And like, that's really interesting to watch because you don't see that very much in professional wrestling. So I actually, really thought that he took to wrestling really well, considering that the luchador style is a little bit tougher than if he were to just do like WWE style, because you're having to do a lot more athletic moves. And the room for error is much smaller when you're doing like a head scissors or you're doing a Frankensteiner. It's very different than if you're just doing a body slam, a suplex, and then throwing a guy in chin lock for 2 minutes, you know? So I think that for him to pick it up as well as he did, and I never thought he would be good at wrestling, because I know that he's been flirting with it for a couple years now, and I was like, if he does, he's going to have a hard time doing it, because wrestling is really, really hard to learn to do, and Kane's taken to it. So, you know, another name in the list of former MMA fighters who have turned over to professional wrestling and were able to take it really well. Best non-wrestler, Paul Heyman. You don't have a whole lot of great non-wrestlers anymore, because WWE's kind of slowly but surely gotten away from like the general manager. And they don't really have managers. There's not a whole lot of companies that do have them. But if I had to make my pick for the best non-wrestler, I would have to say Paul Heyman. Heyman is a really, really good on-screen character. He can cut promos, and he is awesome at being this cowardly heel. There's a lot of great moments when he gets beat up. That's always a good way to pop the crowd. Paul Heyman is just great at what he does. One of the best promos in the game. One of the best managers in the game. I mean, certainly top five. I think that Heyman is a runaway with it, but this category is starting to dwindle a little bit, and I wonder how long that they're going to have this on the list here. Best television announcer, Kevin Kelly, New Japan Pro Wrestling. He had his breakout performance last year, and this year he's grown even better. And he was already really good, did a lot of work for Ring of Honor, even worked for WWE back in the Attitude Era. But he's really worked his way up even more now, because he's really kind of taken ownership of that role for New Japan. And he knows the wrestlers there. It was one of my gripes with like JR, when JR was doing New Japan shows. He didn't know who the hell any of those guys were. He couldn't even pronounce their names right. I remember when he was saying Marty Scurll's name, he said Marty Scurll. Like, he doesn't know these guys. But Kevin Kelly has invested himself into learning about these wrestlers. And, like, he's done a good job of working with Rocky Romero. And really, he's picked it up. He knows a lot about these guys. He works a lot. And it's tough having to go from the United States, where his family is, to Japan. It's so hard to do that, and I certainly have a lot of respect for him, especially when you have to go do the Best of Super Juniors tournament, which is a month long, or the G1 Climax, which is now like a month and a half long. So kudos to him for doing that, and he has become an amazing storyteller. I was not a fan of watching those shows in English. I would usually watch them in Japanese, but Kevin Kelly's got me on the English game now, because he is really, really great at what he does. Worst television announcer, Corey Graves, WWE. Corey Graves did not have a good year this year. Not just on the mic, but off the mic too. Corey Graves has become the Michael Cole of color commentary, whereas he just sits there and he pumps your ears full of these terrible corporate buzzwords over and over and over again. It is annoying to listen to. I cannot stand watching SmackDown because of his voice. Because it's just like, when he was on NXT, he was so great. He was awesome. But now that he's got Vince McMahon yelling in his ear every Friday night from 7 to 9 Central Time, he is just, he now has gotten to the point where he is just giving you the terrible nicknames that they come up with. He's egregious with these stupid nicknames. Like just the big dog, the irresistible force. Just like, use their names, man. That's why they have them. You don't need to use their nickname every single time. And it's just, it's like he doesn't add anything except for when he has his like sharp little quips. Like every now and then he'll have like a sharp little quip that's good. But I would have to say that Corey Graves gets my vote for worst television announcer. Best wrestling show, Wrestle Kingdom 13 for New Japan Pro Wrestling. It was a great show. It was a little bit rushed, but the matches were still really good because they tried to get it in just under 4 hours or so, just about 4 hours. I think that they did an amazing job with doing the final three matches. The final three matches were really good. And, you know, Naito and Jericho had a really good match. Okada, Jay White, that match was great. And then the final match between Kenny Omega and Hiroshi Tanahashi was just amazing. It just, the story was great. The way they carried themselves was great. The match itself was just, the psychology was, it blew my mind. Best wrestling show of the year. And this year didn't have a ton. Like, New Japan this year was not as great as they were in previous years throughout, like the last couple years throughout the year. But definitely this show, amazing. Worst wrestling show, the recent WWE TLC show. Now, you had other options here. You had Hell in a Cell. You had Crown Jewel. But I think that, TLC was terrible. You didn't have a world title match on the show. WWE title wasn't defended at all. The Universal title wasn't defended at all. Even though the Universal champion actually wrestled on the card, they didn't bother making it a title match for some reason. Your main event match was a really bad women's tag team match. And the women's tag team division has been an absolute utter cluster. It's been terrible. And the women's tag team division has been absolutely terrible. I know a lot of people have made a big, big, strong issue with AEW's women's division. It ain't good right now. But the WWE women's tag team division is terrible. It is awful. I mean, they've had some good wrestlers with those belts. They haven't had good wrestling with those belts. Those matches have been trash. And it was, I completely understand why you would have those, like the women's tag titles defended in the main event, but that match sucked. And obviously, you know, a big reason why was because Kairi Sane had her concussion. But even before that, it wasn't great. And it's just like, these women don't do a ton of these kind of matches. They're not really experienced in them. And the way that they do these kind of matches tends to be really choreographed and doesn't feel like it's natural. And I think that really kind of hurts what they're trying to do story-wise. So I think it was actually I think that show was just terrible. I watched it and I was just like, God, this is, I mean, it's not as bad as like previous years, like whatever is it, Battlegrounds from like 2017 when Jinder Mahal wrestled in that awful Punjabi prison match. It was like 30 minutes in the Punjabi prison with Randy Orton. It was such a bad match. I mean, there's been worse shows in previous years, but damn, this show sucked. Best wrestling maneuver, I would say Will Ospreay's Stormbreaker finisher. Kenny Omega, I think, has won it with One Winged Angel the last 3 years. He didn't wrestle very much this year, but Stormbreaker came into the fold, and it is a great finisher. And it's surprising because Will Ospreay is probably just over 200 pounds, maybe a little bit below 200 pounds, and he does it really well against big guys. And so I actually really like the finisher. It looks like it hurts. And I could see him winning a world championship with that move. So I would say Stormbreaker for Will Ospreay, best wrestling maneuver. Worst promotional tactic. This is going to be the thing that wins for years until they stop doing it, which is WWE's relationship with Saudi Arabia. It completely undermines their social causes that they try to push. You know, the anti-bullying, the them working with GLAAD. It completely undermines everything because the country that they're doing major business with is pretty oppressive to their citizens. So this will always win worst promotional tactic unless it's something else that they do, like using Roman Reigns' leukemia as a storyline, which that actually has a good chance to win this year because they did use that earlier in the year. And I think you can make a strong case for it. But I think the relationship with Saudi Arabia, until they stop doing it, is probably going to be your winner every year. Worst television show, Monday Night Raw. That show sucks. It sucks. It is terrible. 3 hours long. If it was 2 hours long, it'd be better, but it's 3 hours long. And it just, you can tell because they fill and they fill and they find a way to fill as much time as they possibly can. It is not good. I do not enjoy watching that show. Worst match of the year, Seth Rollins versus The Fiend Bray Wyatt at Hell in a Cell. I mean, there's been a lot of matches you could look at WWE and say, yeah, that match was not great at all. But that Hell in a Cell match was terrible. I remember when I turned it on, because I didn't watch any other part of that show. I turned that match on, and I was like, oh, no, they're doing the red lights. What the hell is this? Because I do not understand what they are really trying. They're trying so hard to make Bray Wyatt this like scary horror movie villain, horror movie killer, you know, slasher movie killer. And it's just not good. It's not entertaining. They need to kind of get away from that and just let him be this kind of supernatural villain or whatever. And this match was awful. It was literally just Seth Rollins just beating up on Bray Wyatt for most of the match. He hit his finisher like, God, what, 10 times at least? Nothing. Just fans couldn't see the match. You're watching on TV, you could barely see the match. Hell, you know, we've heard backstage that Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt don't like wrestling in the red lights because they can barely see each other when they're not in the ring. So it's just like it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So it's not a good match. It was an awful match, and it was for your world title. At least for your universal title. Why would you do that? You know, why would you have your top title be defended in a match where the wrestlers can't see each other? So that doesn't make any sense. It was an awful match. Worst feud of the year, the Jerry Springer feud that's going on between Rusev and Bobby Lashley. It's terrible. It's death TV for me. I just can't stand watching it. Like the match that they had at TLC, which is another reason why I hated that show. It was not good. I feel no heat out of it. Like it just feels like it's like really bad Jerry Springer. I mean, there's no convincing me, nothing like that. It's just like, hey, let's try to do as much salacious stuff as we possibly can. It's not good. And, you know, now they're going to have a wedding, and it's actually they had a wedding last night on Raw. I didn't watch Raw, but they had a wedding on Raw. It's just it's a terrible feud. It's not entertaining to watch. And they are continuing this storyline and trying to keep it going. And it's not fun for very many people to watch because it's terrible. They're not wrestling good matches. And it's like, we don't care enough about anybody in the match for us to be like, yeah, okay, you know, I'm really interested in this. And that leads me to my worst promotion of the year. That was WWE. Ring of Honor, close number two. I mean, Ring of Honor did not put on a good year at all. They lost so many fans this year. So this was tough. This was a little tough here because I almost went Ring of Honor. But then I had to remember that the fact that they had the worst feud of the year, they had the worst match of the year, they had the worst show of the year. I mean, at least Ring of Honor can keep a base level of kind of good, you know, even now with all that star power lost. But WWE, it's like now I've gotten to a point where I'm like, if a show is good, like I'm like surprised. That shouldn't be the case. Like there should at least be a base level of, eh, this is good. Like AEW is at least, it's good. It's not great, but it's good. Now, AEW will have their moments where they are great. But they're at the very least, like, oh, it's kind of good. Yeah, that was entertaining. Not WWE. If WWE has a, oh, that was a pretty good type moment, I'm like, wow, WWE actually did something right. So definitely my worst promotion of the year, hands down. I mean, I don't even think we'd have to take a vote on this. They're a shoe-in to win it. TNA, when you know, Impact, they had this for a while. Last year, WWE took control because Impact has started to come out of the abyss. And right now, WWE is just, they are absolutely wasting the talent that they have. Best Booker, Ghetto from New Japan Pro Wrestling. He is amazing. This two title storyline is so great. It was great because like you kind of felt, I felt like that's where they were going anyways because they were teasing it with Tetsuya Naito during the summer. Like after Dominion, you know, that's all he talked about was like, yeah, I want to be the first person to hold two titles, to hold the Intercontinental title and the Heavyweight title. And so it was like, okay, I think that's where they're going to go. And so I picked Tetsuya Naito to win the G1 Climax. That didn't happen. Kota Ibushi won it. And that's when they did the kind of whole thing where you had like Ibushi and Naito, and those two guys have wrestled each other so much this year. Hopefully they don't end up wrestling each other at the Tokyo Dome, because it'd be like the fourth time or fifth time we've seen it in the last year. But the way that they've built this storyline up, you could have, I mean, really, your main events for both nights are going to be amazing, regardless of who's in the match. It's going to be amazing. I'm really, really excited about this show. And it's because of Ghetto's work, because he's taken a lot of time in building up these storylines. He writes about 2 years in advance on his storylines. He's not like WWE where they're like last minute changing decisions and whatnot. He plans this stuff out over a year or two, and you can tell because everything just makes sense and everything naturally progresses the way that you think it should. I think that that's certainly something that every other promotion out there can take from him, and I assume that AEW is doing that. They've certainly got some long game that they're doing with their storylines, and I really hope that WWE kind of does the same thing as well, because they could really do some great things as well with the talent that they have. Promoter of the year, Takaaki Kidani. He is the head of Bushiroad, which owns New Japan Pro Wrestling. New Japan made some huge strides this year. Not only did they sell out the Tokyo Dome for the first time in years, they also went and announced that they were going to do two Wrestle Kingdom shows early next year, which is a huge, huge step. That's a big move right there. And then on top of that, he went out and he bought Stardom. And that was a major, major move there as well, because, you know, Stardom is a promotion that is starting to really start to gain some steam. They're gaining some headway and they're really popular. And for him to go out there, it's like, yeah, we want that. We want to be able to help cultivate that is really cool. And now they actually just announced this, I think, maybe an hour or two ago. You're going to see a Stardom match at the Tokyo Dome show at Wrestle Kingdom. So that's going to be really exciting to watch, because that's going to be a way for them to promote Stardom. I'm really, really happy about that. So definitely got to give it to Kidani. New Japan is certainly making some inroads. They're going to struggle here in the U.S. trying to really branch out because of AEW and WWE. But I certainly expect, and you can kind of see the hints now, that their next big move is going to be announcing some sort of partnership with AEW, where they're going to be able to share talent. And that right there is going to be great for both companies, because it means great storylines, it means great wrestling, and it means great business for both companies here in the U.S. and in Japan. Final two in the B Awards, best gimmick is The Fiend. They've made some missteps with it, but it still is a really great gimmick, and it's the most entertaining thing on WWE TV right now. Worst gimmick, King Corbin. King Corbin has been trash. The King gimmick is always the worst gimmick you can give out, unless, you know, you start to get to some of these other really awful, awful gimmicks. King Corbin, though, has been trash because Vince always goes over the top with these King gimmicks. They have to wear a crown. They have to have a cape. They have to carry a scepter. They have to use all these stupid royal terms. And it's just like, you don't need to do this. Like, no one believes it. So he always goes too far with the King gimmicks, and it generally kills whoever is using that gimmick. I mean, Sheamus did it, and it was pretty much the end of him being taken seriously. They did it with Barrett as well, with Wade Barrett, and that was pretty much the end of his time at being a potential main eventer. So this could very well be the end of anyone taking Baron Corbin seriously at all. And now he's kind of become a more of a, he's getting the go away heat. So that's the end of the B Awards. The A Awards, match of the year goes to Kenny Omega versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. Main event for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship at Wrestle Kingdom 13. This match was amazing. I remember I was so tired waking up to watch this show. It was rough because it's 2:30 in the morning Central Time that show starts. And I just remember getting up and I was watching this show. And like, I was a little nervous because I had a feeling that this was probably going to be Kenny's last match in New Japan. I was hoping not, but I was getting a feeling like that was probably going to be the case. I was like, if he does leave, you know, he's probably, you know, if the AEW rumors are true, then that's where he's going to go. But, you know, at the same time, I still wanted him to be there because Kenny is, he's so great in Japan. He's so great in New Japan. And this was a match I was really looking forward to. Man, Kenny killed it. Kenny killed this match. He worked as a heel, actually. This whole feud, he was actually a heel during the whole time. Hiroshi Tanahashi was such a great, he's such a great babyface. I've been saying this for a while now. Hiroshi Tanahashi right now is the greatest wrestler of all time, by far. You can't make a case for anyone else. Not in the ring, not on the mic, not as far as being a, I mean, you could do it for a draw. You could do Hogan or you could do Flair. But I mean, he in Japan is the biggest draw they've ever had, probably besides like Inoki or Great Baba. He has been an amazing draw. He has built up that that promotion from being in the very depths. You know, if you go back 10 years ago, they were on life support. But he officially became the guy in like 2009, 2010. I think it was 2010. That's really when they kind of passed the torch to him and made him the top guy. And at that point, he carried this company on his shoulders. I mean, it was a great sight to see because, I mean, they introduced Okada in 2012 with the Rainmaker gimmick, and you know, he beat him in their first matchup. I think it was at New Beginning. Beat him their first matchup there right after the Tokyo Dome. And then he just comes back and he wins it. And like, then they have this great feud going on, and that feud boosts up the popularity of the company. Tanahashi, this is a guy that gets it done. And at his age, because he's like 42 now, he should not be doing the things that he should not be wrestling as well as he is. The guy is so hurt. The guy tore his biceps. Like, I think it was like 2.5, almost 3 years ago, he tore his biceps. Never got surgery on it. That's why he wears that armband on his right arm. You know, that's why he wears that sleeve. Both his knees are shot, and you can tell because you watch him walk to the ring and he is struggling. He is laboring to the ring. But as soon as that bell rings, it's like every one of his ailments in his body is just completely erased and he's good to go. That adrenaline kicks in and he is good to go. But you can see he is pained. And the fact that he can go out there and wrestle this match against Kenny Omega, who is in the prime of his career and he's wrestling the best that he's ever wrestled, and you got a hell of a classic match. And Tanahashi wasn't wrestling a Tanahashi-style match. He was wrestling a Kenny Omega-style match. he was taking risks. You know, he did a high fly flow. I think it was off the top turnbuckle through a table when Kenny moved out the way. Like, it was just so many amazing spots, such great psychology. And you, by the end, when he finally won that match and won the heavyweight title, you're like, oh my God, man. I just witnessed one of the best ending to one of the best storylines that New Japan's ever done. Cause it was the Roger Federer when he had that comeback and won the Australian Open. And I think it was in 2017. It was kind of built based off of that. And that's really where you saw this amazing storyline of this past his prime wrestler who's hurt, who's injured, who can't stay healthy. And he's able to put it together for that one potential last run. It was amazing. Best match of the year for me, from a storytelling standpoint, from a wrestling standpoint, from a star power standpoint. Both of those guys are mega over in Japan. Match of the year. Best TV show is NJPW on Access, mainly just because it's just their pay-per-view shows. It's a great show. It's kind of cheating, to be honest, because it's just their pay-per-view shows. And there's nothing in wrestling that measures to their top shows. But it is still amazing to watch. The way they did the G1 was amazing. The Wrestle Kingdom shows are great. They just do a really good job of making these matches feel important and feel like they are big fights. And that's the reason why it's the best out there. NXT was really close. I didn't really want to include AEW because AEW is only... it was only around for 3 months of the year, so I'm not going to include AEW in that. We'll see what they do next year, but for me, it was really just kind of NXT or New Japan, and I think it's pretty clearly New Japan. Promotion of the year is New Japan Pro Wrestling. Absolutely had the best year. Not as good of a year as we've seen the last couple years, but still great calendar year thus far. Great Tokyo Dome show. You had some really nice storylines leading into the G1 Supercard show where Okada won the title again. Best of Super Juniors is great. I mean, seriously, that Shingo Takagi and Will Ospreay match is just one of the best matches of the year. You have to watch it. And then obviously the G1 climax, which is amazing. Kota Ibushi finally wins it. That storyline there was really, really fun because he was hurt. He sprained his ankle in the first match of the year. I mean, the first match of the tournament. And after that, he just keeps going and he just keeps wrestling. And it was a great storyline. They actually used it in a lot of his matches as a storyline piece, as a psychology piece. And it worked. And it made you want to root for him more because, like, oh my God, he's really hurt. And we knew he was really hurt because he posted a photo of his swollen ass ankle on Twitter after he wrestled. I think it was Kenta after that first night when they were in Dallas. So that they're just doing great stuff, and they've got a really jam packed show for the 4th and the 5th of next year. So NJPW promotion of the year. Best on interviews is Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho, again, said he's the U.S. MVP, and he did such a great job of having these memorable moments on the microphone for AEW. He was also really good at New Japan as well. He created a funny nickname for Hiroshi Tanahashi, which is Bakahashi, which, for those of you who don't know, in Japanese, Baka means idiot. So he nicknamed him Bakahashi after he lost to Okada at Dominion, and that kind of kicked off the whole thing with him and Tanahashi leading into the Tokyo Dome. And it was really funny because he came in there and he was able to, he got the crowd laughing with that, which is funny because they usually don't laugh at heels like that. They'll cheer him if they talk about like their accomplishments, but they typically won't laugh at an insult like that. So it's actually pretty funny. And then on top of that, he kind of came up with the whole Painmaker thing, which was really great. He had a great feud with Tetsuya Naito leading into the Tokyo Dome earlier this year. I mean, this guy is gold, and you could see it on Dynamite every single week. Everything he touches turns to gold. So definitely my best on interviews for the year. Tag team of the year, this was tough. I couldn't pick Young Bucks because Young Bucks haven't wrestled very much this year, even though they've been great. I mean, you could make a case for them. I just don't think it's as good as the Lucha Brothers case. Lucha Brothers have been wrestling the entire year. They've been great the entire year. And I mean, I thought about War Machine, but I was like, War Machine hasn't had a great year, especially since they went up to the main roster. They've just kind of been going through the motions because there's the tag team division on Raw and SmackDown sucks. So it really was kind of just, it was more of a, it's either Lucha Brothers or I'm going to have to try and stretch for Young Bucks. And I just look at it as like Young Bucks have been great, but they've only been great for part of the year. Lucha Brothers have been great the entire year. Proud and Powerful was also an option for this as well because they've been awesome this year. And you could make a really good case for them as well. But I don't think as good as Lucha Brothers because they've been great all year long. And on top of that, they are big-time stars right now. And AEW's got to use them better because they are – I think they've kind of been wasted. I thought, like, if you can have anybody beat SCU for the titles, it's either them or it's YB. And I think it actually probably be Proud and Powerful now. But Lucha Brothers, my tag team of the year. Most outstanding wrestler of the year. This just tackles in-ring stuff. Just in ring is not promos or anything like that. It's just in ring. Most outstanding wrestler, though, is Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay was so great this year. He wrestled against light heavyweights. He wrestled against heavyweights. And he was great against both of them. He evolved his game throughout the year. Early on, he was doing dangerous stuff that might end his career early. He might end up like Dynamite Kid. Then he gets into the late spring, early summer, and he changes his style up. Less of the high-flying moves, and he's doing more, not like ground-based work, but he's doing more work based off of, it was more technical, more powerhouse, and it was more psychology-based. It wasn't so much just about doing flashy moves, and it made his matches great. And, you know, he would incorporate the flashy moves in, like, the key moments when you're, you know, at that sprint to the finish. But he wouldn't try to beat you over the head with flashy moves throughout in order to awe you. And that's really where you gotta take your hat off to him, because you don't see evolution like that quickly in wrestling. He's put on a lot of muscle this year. Like, I think he's probably gained 15 to 20 pounds of muscle. The dude is starting to get bigger, and he is really starting to grow into his body, and he's really starting to change his game up in a way that kind of fits how his physique needs to be in order for them to, like, really take him seriously as a heavyweight. And he did a great job in that G1. Like, that to me was a masterful performance, because in that G1, he had to wrestle some guys like Lance Archer. And, you know, you wrestle like Lance Archer, and Lance Archer's not great, but he's not bad. He's a good wrestler. Man, he made Lance look like a superstar in that match that they had in Dallas on the first night of the G1. Man, such a great year. I mean, this guy is starting to really get into his own, and I think you can make a case for him being the best in the world. I would still give it to Okada, but man, right now, Ospreay, he certainly was the best of the year as far as in-ring. So finally we get to Wrestler of the Year. This one is not a category that I can vote on because I'm not a wrestler or anybody in the industry. But if I had to give my pick, it would be Chris Jericho. He is the Wrestler of the Year. He is, and this incorporates not just in-ring, but it incorporates microphone work. It incorporates interviews that you do outside of the ring. Anything that you do. And he has been the standard bearer for what you see in wrestling now for a top heel, you know, a heel champion. He's as good as they come. I mean, unless you do a monster heel, you got to have a guy like Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho has been made to look strong this year. Even when he gets help, he still looks strong in his matches. They don't do the cowardly heel thing where he's just afraid of every opponent that he faces. he's so much like Ric Flair. And it's just crazy because, like, I never thought anybody could go out there and put on a Ric Flair imitation and it be really good. Man, his Ric Flair imitation is amazing. I mean, he's got the swagger like Ric Flair. He is he's got everything. Le Champion, a little bit of the bubbly. I mean, everything that he does turns to gold right now. And you got to give him a lot of credit because he was put in a very high pressure position being in AEW and, you know, taking a risk on a company that had absolutely no clout whatsoever. So I got to give it to him. He's been great on television, and he certainly has helped boost up the profile of AEW thus far. And he's been giving a rub to a lot of guys, even though he's still looking strong in that matter. So I think that Chris Jericho absolutely is my wrestler of the year. He absolutely deserves each and every ounce of credit that you can give him because he went and took a risk and he is thriving right now. So that concludes this edition of the Heat Magnet podcast. That is my 2019-2020 Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards ballot. I didn't include the MMA stuff because this is a wrestling podcast, and so I'm not going to talk about the MMA stuff on this show. But next week, I will be back on Thursday, not this coming Thursday, but next Thursday at our regular night. I'm going to review all the news from WWE, AEW, New Japan, Pro Wrestling. Definitely give you a preview of the Tokyo Dome show as well. I'm really excited about that damn show. And then the Monday after the Tokyo Dome shows, that's January 6th. Took that day off from my day job, so I will be in here early that Monday so I can do a special extra episode reviewing the two-night Wrestle Kingdom 14 show. I would highly recommend that you watch this show as it might end up being the best show of next year, and it could be one of the best of all time. So make sure that you do not miss it. If you love professional wrestling, you should absolutely watch this show because it might be one of the best you ever watched. Until then, make sure that you subscribe and you download the podcast on the radio.com app on the Heat Magnet podcast page. I thank you for listening, and I will talk to you again next Thursday.